gentlemen, I want to share with you a story that I read today. I don't know how you're going to swallow this. Myself still a bit, but I think it's a good story. I mean, because I saw it from a very reliable sefer. Okay, the story goes: Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan Spector, Rabbi Yisai, he was the Kovner Rav, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, who was nifta 1897. He was one of the Gedolei, Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan. Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan came from a very simple house. Simple both in Torah and also financially. Also, it was very poor. I think it was a Yossim as well. I believe he was brought up without. And Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan learned Yiddish in a cheder, and as he had no, his clothing was worn out, and he was learning by Asmod Gedolah, but he had no. And his shoes also in particular, there was nothing left of his shoes. Shoes was a big expense in those days. So his friend told him, you know, you can't walk around like this, you're going to catch pneumonia. It's the winter, it's snowing, you're going to catch pneumonia. But you know, there is a rich person up on the hill over there. You can go and ask him because he's got a shoe factory. He's a very wealthy Yid. He's got a shoe factory. Why don't you go and ask him? Perhaps he's going to give you some shoes. So it's called Chonon. He was very hesitant. He was very timid by nature. And he firstly didn't want to decline. Didn't want to go. But he was asked a few times. He said, you know what? You can't walk. He finally decided. He agreed against his nature. And he went up to this hill and he asked his gvir. The gvir opened it. His butler opened it. He knocked on the door. Butler opened the door. He said, can I speak to the balabais? And he said, yeah. He went inside. And Yitzchok Yochanan said, what do you want? Yitzchok Yochanan says, 12-year-old bocha, 13-year-old bocha. He says, I just want to know if there's some spare shoes. I can't walk around with those shoes anymore and I have no money to buy. Purchase new shoes. Can you help me? So this gentleman says, you look like a strong man to me, a strong bocha to me. There's no reason why I should give you shoes. Go and work. Go and work. Get out of here. Go and work. Make your own living. Why is she knowing about me? And he chucked him out of the house. Very, very literally chucked him out of the house. Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan was so hurt and embarrassed and humiliated from this experience. He couldn't talk for a few days. He was completely shut. His friend got engaged a couple of weeks later, and he got to a wealthy girl, and he was able to afford a new suit, which was that itself was a whole thing, and a new pair of shoes, which was even a. And he told him, take my suit, take my shoes, you know, and like this, you can walk around like a mensch. And he did. He took his friend who became a chasn, he took his suit and his shoes, and that. Fine. The story goes, Yitzchok Yochanan continued learning, Basmod Gedolah got married very, very young, and he became Rav when he was 20. And he became a Rav of a slightly larger Kelly when he was 30. And by the time he was 30, early 30s, he became the Rav of Kovna, one of the most prestigious communities in Russia. He became the Kovna Rav. By that point, he was world famous. He published his first forum, Be'er Yitzchok, Ein Yitzchok, Shailas and Chuvas. He was world famous, and he was one of the greatest Torah giants of the generation. Everyone went to Yitzchok Yochanan. By the way, the Pesach that we have got, some of the Pesachim that we are, the basic Pesachim, still from Yitzchok Yochanan, such as the way we look at electricity, the way we look at sound, some of the basic understandings are based on Yitzchok Yochanan. So Yitzchok Yochanan was famous, but there was a son, Nikolai II, I believe, who was one of the greatest Toshoim, as we know. He wanted to make new decrees against the Yidden in Russia, and after a lot of Shtadlonas and Askonim got busy to arrange to, and they managed that two Yidden should go and represent the Jews in front of Tsar Nikolai, and with great difficulties, but they yet managed to get two people to go and have a discussion with Tsar Nikolai against the new decrees that they wanted to decree against the Yidden. And one of them was obviously going to be the Kovner Rav, Yitzchok Yochanan was the Gadol HaDor, and the second one was going to be the most wealthy and one of the wealthiest Yidden in Russia, which was this this Yid who had his shoe factory was extremely wealthy. And those two, here they came, they got together to go to do representation and to do some shtadlonas in front of the Tsar Nikolai. And they went together. Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan recognized him straight away. But this Yid, it was 40 years later or 30 years later, didn't recognize Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan, didn't recognize him. He didn't remember, obviously, that conversation they had. So Rabbi Yitzchok Yochanan recognized him straight away. They went to Tsar Nikolai, and after a very tense conversation, they managed to get him to annul the decree. And in fact, Tsar Nikolai said he had to do with the holy appearance. The holy appearance of this Jew made him, he looked like he was talking, he was not like an angel, that's what he said. And therefore he was happy to annul this particular decree. Again, he was one of the greatest of Shoim, but yet this particular case, he didn't decree. So they after this meeting with the Tsar Nikolai, they traveled back in the train. He was so astonished and amazed by Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan that he said, listen, you are the greatest Torah child of this generation and I'm one of the wealthiest. Why don't we make a Yisachar Zvulun kind of deal? Why don't we make a Yisachar Zvulun? You know, half of your Torah comes to me and I'll give you, well, I can't give you half my fortune, but I can give you, you know, we're going to make some shutfas. I'll give you money. You can live off comfortably, you and your children, your grandchildren. I'll give you money, and you, the schos of the Torah, should come to me. Now we know Yisachar Zvulun works. How it works, why it works, it's a question on its own. But Yisachar Zvulun does work. It's a deal that can work. So let's make a contract. You've got to make a contract for Yisachar Zvulun, and let's make this deal. I'll give you all the money, and the schos of your Torah, being the Torah giant of the generation, you give me the Torah, I give you the money. Yisachar look at him and he said, listen, I'm afraid. We could have done this deal some years ago, and it would have cost you all but a pair of shoes. Now, my friend, it's too late. I'm not accepting your offer, even for half of your fortune. That's what he said, and he didn't go for it. And he explained. So that 30 years ago, you could have done it, but then you weren't interested in that pure. You weren't interested in Torah then. I wasn't famous, I wasn't well known, I was just a normal Ben Yeshiva, nothing extraordinary about me. Now, the fact you're interested is purely because he was famous by then, he was an international name, he was the Kovner Rav, he was he had written, published important Sforim. So that's what you want. You want access to that? Fine, it's too late. If you genuinely want a Torah, if you genuinely want to support Torah, you could have done it then. Now it's too late. You could have done it for a pair of shoes, but not now. Interesting story. What do you think about it? What do you think about it? I think it's a very interesting story. Do you agree to it?
It's definitely a true story.
I saw it from a very reliable source. From a safer, very reliable source, yeah. Now, obviously, there's one element which we might not like about it. What's the element? There's a bit... There's an accom element in it, a bit, perhaps, yeah? But I think that it's still okay. Why is it... Why? Well, because I think that... It's not that it wasn't a comma, because he just wanted to, the way I understand it with Yitzchak Elkanan, didn't want to be supported by somebody that didn't appreciate and value Torah. He said, you don't really want my Torah, you don't really value the Torah. You value something else that you're seeing in me now. And that's perhaps why. I'm not sure, but it bothers me a bit as well, but I think that might be pshat.
No, it's okay, because it was done by the
Kabbalah. Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that's the Yitzchak Elkanan and the story of that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Rabbi Yisai, we are up to Simon Tov Nun Vav, page 106, and we are learning today about the Shir Kamus Lishas Hamatz. We started yesterday. We'll go into further details today, especially in terms of how we arrange that with today's difficulties. We'll see. Okay, the halacha is for us. En loshin lePesach iso gedoylo mishir chala. We know there's a halacha of taking shir when the dough that you're making is called a shir, a measurement of chala. You have to be mafrish chala. You have to separate chala. Yeah, whether it's 1.2, 1.4, 1.6 kilo, we know once you've got a certain amount of flour, you've got to be mafrish challah. Now, if it's a very large amount of dough, very large amount of flour, then there is an issa that you cannot make matzahs out of that. So the shir challah is fine. If you've got that amount of dough that you need to be mafrish challah, that's fine. But if you're taking a lot more, if the issa, the dough is far greater than that, far larger than that, then it's also. Why? So Shulchan Aruch explains, Ein loshin lePesach iso gedoylo. You may not need on Pesach iso gedoylo, a large amount of dough, Meshir Chala, greater than the amount of Chiyuv Chala. What is it? Aboim v'sholosh beitzim v'choymesh beitzo beinonim. Aboim v'shalosh beitzim, 43 eggs, the amount of 43 eggs, v'choymesh and a fifth beitzo beinonim. So 43 and a fifth. How much is that? If you're doing a percentage, 43.2. Yeah? Eggs will be beinonim. That is the measure that you'll add. Beyond that is also v'isoron, which is called in halachic terms an isoron. V'chein yeshay oisa. How do you figure out what an isoin is? Yemale kli mayim. You should fill a kli, a vessel, mayim of water. V'yore amayim mimenu. And you should pour it into a different kli. V'yemale amayim mimenu lekli achen into a different keli. V'achkach. And after that, yiten aboim v'sholosh beitzim. You should place 43 eggs into the initial keli. And then you pour the water back into this first keli where the eggs are now. She'era mimenu, that it was empty, eggs were emptied out. That the eggs are in there now. V'yachse boyamayim she'era mimenu v'amayim she'evosu, and the spare water which doesn't fit in the first keli anymore, yitnein bekli acher, that you should put in a kli acher in a different keli. And v'akli amachzik oisam hu amid lemalois mekemach, and that is now you've got a shield of the isoin of the 43 eggs. V'amido, full stop. So it's a way of figuring out how much 43 eggs is. You want to know the liquid amount of 43 eggs. So what you do is you take a big keli, you fill it with water. You empty it out with water. You empty it out into a different keli, into a jug two, into a different keli. You now place 43 eggs into the initial keli. You now pour the water into the first keli. Now, obviously, there won't be enough space because there's 43 eggs in there. The remaining amount that you have got that doesn't manage to get back into the first keli, that is obviously the amount of 43 eggs. That's it. So that's the way you figure it out.
We're not looking for 43 eggs worth of flour, not of water.
Yes, but that you. Yeah, we're just trying to figure. We want to know the share now of an isoin. You're right. Obviously, what we really were seeking is, of course, flour. You're right. But now that I know how much an isoin is, I'll be able to use that for flour too. V'hamida mechuka v'loy gedusha. It should be, when you're doing this experiment, make sure that it's tight, mida mechuk tight, v'loy gedusha, not overflowing. And if you want to know the equivalent in terms of flour, so somebody obviously worked it out already and figured out what the shear is. Mikemachito mitzis, from flour, grain flour, mitzis, Egyptian flour. It is 510 dram. It is 530 dram. Mitzrim bekerif. It's approximately 530 mitzisha dram. Now, what I mean in grams, I have no idea. But that's what... is it still a dram? Is it still existing? Is that still an Egyptian shear?
Drum. Dram is...
Yeah. Okay, so that's what it is. V'lo yitchak akemach b'mido. Don't press it, don't squeeze the flour too much. Timken lo yoyishofe. That's an important halacha. You may not squeeze the flour too much. If you squeeze it, what happens when you squeeze flour? Yeah, that's exactly it. It can't get the imke loyosh, that won't knead well. So you make it a bit airy.
Eighth of an ounce? Eighth of an ounce? Eighth of an ounce or 3.69 milliliters.
Doesn't sound right.
One drum.
Yeah, drum, you know. Ah, yeah, one drum, that makes right. If it's one, yeah. So if you're looking at 530
drum would be
the equivalent.
530 times
'Cause it's volumetric rather than a
yes, you're right. In terms of the measure, you're right. It's just a practical addition that if you squeeze it too much, then it's not going to be able to knead well. So take that into consideration.
195 milliliters.
About 2 liters
worth, yeah. Okay.
Two big
bottles of water. So that's the... 195 milliliters is 0.2 of a liter.
Is it 1,000 or 100? A mil is 100.
A mil is 1.
A liter is a thousand.
Interesting one, interesting one. We discussed this a little bit, touched on this. We discussed this earlier. V'toiv loima, it is good to say, b'shas nesinas hakemach lemido, when you pour the flour And when you add the flour, when you're measuring the flour, when you're dealing with the flour, it is proper to say, she'oiseh, that you're doing so, l'shem mitzvah, for the purpose of the mitzvah. Again, this is interesting. What's interesting about that? What's the mitzvah aspect of that? You're measuring, you're evaluating, yeah. But yet we're finding this is still considered enough being part of the mitzvah that you are, that you're saying, she'oiseh, l'shem mitzvah. I will point out what the Behetev says. Behetev, if you notice, in Sifkot and Dalet is l'shem mitzvah, v'chem b'shiva samayim, v'chem sh'noisen mayim l'sich kemach. He adds and reminds us over here as well that when you pour the water, you say l'shem mitzvah. When you pour the water into the flour, you will always say l'shem mitzvah. Right, continues the Shulchan Aruch. Im losh yoyse mishir zeh. If you need more than this amount, mutter b'di'evet, it is still fine. It's mutter, but that's only b'di'evet. I'm going to get back to this Shulchan Aruch shortly. I want to just complete Siv Gimel, which tells us as follows. Aval p'shein moedin kemach b'yomtev lolosh, although you're not allowed to measure flour on yomtev, not even for matzah, you're not allowed to measure the amount of not to measure the amount of flour on Yom Tov. B'Yom Tov shel Pesach shein los in ishok doylem yisoon mutalim do. The only exception is here on Yom Tov of Pesach, in order not to increase, in order not to have the high amount than the yisoon, so in order to make sure you don't have the full yisoon, there you're allowed to measure. Never measure on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The only exception is so this is considered sufficient of a mitzvah, right? Yeah, v'yesh oisim. Some say you cannot. Hello, yikach po'em edadas. You take approximately for liyabe alison, and just make sure that you don't overdo it more than ison. V'ochilok, and that's the minute. Because at the end of the day, if it's a little bit more, it's not going to be asa b'di'evet. So therefore, it may not be considered sufficient reason to actually measure. Because if you do it approximately in your mind, so it's good. It's going to be good enough. And therefore, there's no heter according to the second opinion. That's how we paskin. Since you don't have to be exact. You don't have to be precise. It doesn't matter if it's not accurate. And therefore, you can't actually measure. You can't use equipment for that. Now, the obvious question is, and we touched on it. I forgot to ask yesterday. The obvious question is, okay, if you can't do more than isoren, all right. So, okay, that's okay if you're baking matzahs on your own. But nowadays, if we eat machine matzahs, I mean, how many kilos do you think they make? Good, he's gone. Machine matzahs. What? How many kilos? How many sewn? Oh, that's the Mishnah Berurah. Yeah. What? Nesivkun Aleph? Oh, very good. Yeah, absolutely. So the answer is, the Mishnah Berurah Sifkot Zayin goes into greater detail than that. And it will explain to us this key question, that how do we manage with this nowadays? How do we actually sort it out? Yeah. Oh, so the reason is, let's look at Sifkot Aleph. En Loshin. Lefi Shishiori Chachomim, the Chachomim understood, when a single person, when he's busy with his hands, and he's misasik biyodoy beisa, and he's busy with the dough, belisha, with the kneading, ve'aricha, and the setting up, einu matzila mechimutz, he was not going to be able to save it from becoming chometz, kshigdoy lebiyoyse meisoren, hamusik hamani, he's got this amount. Because hands cannot reach. Will not reach all the sides. Because of its size. So this is not metaphysics. It's not Kabbalah. It's not Halacha Mishmi Sinai. There's a very practical aspect to it. That there's nothing which is as close to chometz as matzah dough. Matzah dough is about to become chometz. Novos, we're going to bake matzahs out of that. But in reality, you've got water, you've got flour, it's a dough now, right, and now it's going to become chametz. But we're baking it, all right, so we're baking it. But if you don't need everything, so it's likely to be, it will become chametz. So the kneading saves it from becoming chametz. But that's all right if you're actually kneading it. And if you are tackling and handling, very literally handling, all of it. But if there's parts of it and elements which you're not reaching, it's going to become chametz. Therefore, Chomim said, if it is, the shear is soroin, we assume that if it's one person, he will reach all parts of it and it won't become chametz. However, one person who is needing a larger amount than that, we're assuming that parts of it became chametz. Yeah. Yes. Well, no, it wouldn't make a difference if it's a few matzahs. It's the dough that he's using. You see, then what happens if he makes out of that a few matzahs? Yeah, it doesn't have to be one matzah. It could be a few matzahs. The point. Yeah, so it doesn't have to be constant. Yeah, so that's what we are saying. That if he's cutting into few, he's making a few. If there's a bit, that will be fine. But it's the kind of amount that is manageable. Maximum. Yeah.
Is this on Pesach or on Erev Pesach?
Yes. I don't think it makes a difference. Why do you think it might make a difference? Why would it make a difference if it's before or on Pesach?
I mean, is this like if you only make matzah, like, you know, after Chatzos and Erev
Pesach? I don't think it would make a difference. I don't think it would make a difference.
Is there a tool like that? A tool like making it on...
Well, it would be the same if it's done a bit, 2 months before as well. Why would it make a difference? Is there any reason to make it? Why would it become more or less?
That's stamina in making matzahs.
I don't see why it should make a difference if it's Erev Pesach or before. Now, therefore, what happens if you make it? So the Mishnah Berurah addresses if cotton zayin, what happens if you're using what we're doing nowadays? I mean, we're making far larger amounts than just isorin in one time. So the Mishnah Berurah answers. Well, what's going to be the obvious answer?
Machine.
And if you don't go with machine, then. Many people. That's as straightforward as that. The sewing is for one person. If there's more people, it's going to be.
But isn't it still the ratio?
And also the machine matzahs also that it's in fact many who hold the machine matzahs, they hold that it's much better because of that, because the machines will reach all areas much quicker and much more constant, and therefore there's no this chashash wouldn't even apply. Mishnah Berurah does not address machine matzahs, which is a pele. Machine matzahs did exist really then. He doesn't address it, but many poskim say that this is far better. It will not become chametz.
Shouldn't there be a ratio in hamatz?
Yes, so the Mishnah Berurah says this for you. Yeah, indeed. So the Mishnah Berurah says, I'm skipping a few lines within the Sifkot and Dalet. Yesh poskim sheikilu be'ikad din zeh be'omeinu. Many poskim hold. Nowadays, this is more lenient. Ve'ledaitom lo'ichoshashu chachomim b'zeh. And chachomim... According to their opinions, Chachamim were not concerned about this. Rag b'yemeihem, only in those days, she'odam echad ha'yolosh ve'oirech, that one person would need and set it up. V'hoyu oichin b'yodayim, and they would use their hands. Bli'a, hamilin shel eitz, and they didn't have equipment of wood. V'yodavu mishtai harb, and things would take much longer. V'gam, additionally, furthermore, tanureim ha'yuktanim, their ovens would be, they were quite small. Shelo yulecholim lirdois l'seichatanu, they weren't able to place numerous matzahs, harbe matzahs bevasacha simultaneously. They could only put one matzah at a time. Voyo mishtayer harbe matzahs aladaf b'yesek, and therefore to be a long queue of matzahs, of unbaked matzahs waiting on the side. V'lehochi, and therefore manu chachomim refrained melolosh shir godoy b'machas. Therefore chachomim refrained from yidden baking simultaneously numerous matzahs. You can't do that. Shia God is also avol b'yameinu, but nowadays she'oifin matzois, that we bake matzahs b'oizim rabin with many helpers. V'gam, and additionally tanureinu gdolim oid, our ovens are very large. V'loshin v'oichin, and we need v'oifin, and we bake bezrizus godel in great speed and swiftly. Ein hachmir, there is no reason to be stringent. Hafilu b'loshin b'mino gdoila, even if you bake and you need a substantial amount, a large amount, in this b'pamachas, it won't go. Shebevada lo yovor de chemutz, because certainly they will not become chometz. V'olim nagu lechatchilek de'ezu, and the custom is, the universal custom is to rely on this even lechatchile ben imchos biyodim. There is no reason to protest against it. Ma'achas since sheish lam al minismoich, because this plinth, this the rationale makes a lot of sense. Mikol mokum nevertheless kol yesh shemaim. Somebody's got fear of heaven. Yireh should see lachmi kedei rishono. However many should try to be stringent if it's possible. Without yishuvim ketanim, that's if it's small areas. She'elam misaskim habe. If there is not a lot of workers, then there is room to be stringent. Then if there are not a lot of workers, then you should certainly be careful and you should be stringent. Right, so here's the point. And certainly when it comes to machine matzahs, again, the way it's manufactured, the kneading, if you've ever seen it, is done in such a... If you haven't seen it, then I strongly recommend to try to see it. They're done in such a vigorous kneading process. It's absolutely impossible for you to become chametz. However much there is a limit how much they put in as well. But even the large amounts, even the hashkochas, which are not considered such amazing hashkochas, even the matzahs that are not so great. But this element, by the machine matzahs, is very mahuda, very mahuda.
Could say that the Chabad Chaim did kind of allude to it by saying the Mayhem, they didn't have the equipment, and now we have the equipment.
So maybe he's referring to machine matzahs. It could be. It's something which has been bothering me for a long time, that the Mishnah, he doesn't address the manufacturer. The Machlokas was within 50, the discussion was 50 years old by then. Yeah, 50 years old at least.
So much,
but he could have mentioned it. And also, electricity generally, the Mishnah is very, very reluctant to mention electrical equipment in a few places. He mentioned once in Mishnah, he mentions in El Cheshabbos, he talked. Pardon? That's not the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't speak about the barn. There was Ma'asham. Does he speak about. He does. Steam engines, yes, he does. Yes, yeah, steam engines, yeah. Yeah. But light, I mean, when was there Isaac Newton? When was he? Light bulbs, when was that?
Oh, that was the thing between Tesla and, Nikola Tesla.
Right, so this is 1890s. Right, so Mishavur was published long. I don't understand why. I mean, I know that Radin wasn't the most developed area, but Mishnebu, sure. I don't know why it doesn't address it in the Sefer. I'm not sure. But certainly here, when it comes to machine maths, it doesn't actually spell it out. But the Maestas of the Poskim are very, very happy with that element in the machine maths. Right, okay. That's it for this evening. Okay.